When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to My Favourite Work of Art with me, Dr. Laura Jane Foley. Each week, I'm joined in the studio by a guest who tells me all about an artwork that means something to them. Today, my guest is the theatre director and writer Stephen Unwin. Stephen read English at Cambridge University and as a student directed an award-winning production of Measure for Measure, which transferred to London's Almeida Theatre. For much of the 1980s, he was associate director at the Traverse Theatre in Edinburgh. In the early 90s, he was resident director at the National Theatre Studio in London. He founded the English Touring Theatre in 1993, and he opened the Rose Theatre in Kingston in 2008, where he served as artistic director until 2014. Stephen has written 8 books on theatre and drama, and he is also the author of 4 original plays. Stephen is chair of KIDS, a national charity which provides a wide range of services to disabled young people and their families. He lives in London and he has 3 children. I'm delighted he's joining me today. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello.
Hello. So tell me, what is your favourite work of art?
So I plumped for 2 works of art by the same artist.
Okay.
And they are The Baptism of Christ, which is in the National Gallery, and The Resurrection, which is on a wall in San Sepolcro in Italy.
Okay.
And both just, by Piero.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, The Resurrection, we've got reproductions here. So The Resurrection is an image of Christ staring straight ahead with one leg raised upon a tomb. Presumably mere moments after the resurrection, and beneath him are 4 soldiers who are asleep. And the baptism of Christ is similarly Christ in the centre of the image, being baptised by John the Baptist.
That's correct. In both of them, there are things that connect these 2 paintings. In both of them, Christ is in the middle, staring out at us, and all the other figures are caught within the plane of the painting. And in both paintings, Christ is absolutely in the middle, in the most kind of obvious, perfect, dominant position in the painting. One of the things that I love about both these paintings, well, there's so many things I love about them, but that there is a formal control and counterpoint between the figure looking out at you and all the figures who are caught up in the individual moment of the drama. And you can draw through this, as I used to do as a kind of eager 17-year-old, you could draw through these paintings extraordinary lines of construction. And it's almost mathematical in its... they're both almost mathematical in their power and in their control, sort of almost in their objectivity. And I'm very, very struck by that.
I think it's interesting, an art historical point, in that Piero della Francesca was known for his writings on mathematics and geometry and perspective. Yeah. So I think very clearly in those 2 paintings, there is a sort of marriage of art and science, in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, is that your background? Have you got a sort of mathematical or scientific background as well? Was that an interest as a child?
No, I don't think it is mathematics. I mean, what's strange for me is I was brought up in Catholicism and I am now an absolute devout atheist. And these paintings, in an interesting way, combine both a sense of the mysterious and, if you like, the divine with an absolute secularism, which I think is one of the characteristics of the best Christian art, is that there's this kind of connection between the divine and the earth and the earthly. And I think that that, in a funny kind of way, speaks very deeply to me and is, as have informed most of my work ever since, that both are caught there, I find very, very striking. In terms of the mathematics, I love the sense of objectivity. There's a phrase that's used about Chekhov, who's one of my favourite playwrights, which is objectivity and commitment, that it both stands for something, and like a doctor. If you imagine the doctor who can analyse what is wrong with the body with great objectivity, but then has this passionate commitment to making the person better. You can't just be objective, but nor can you just be passionate. You have to have both, it seems to be, in life. And I think that these paintings express that with extraordinary power.
They're both deeply symbolic. In the resurrection, we on the left-hand side of Jesus, we see barren trees, dead trees, in a sense. And then on the on the right-hand side, they are lush and full of life. And I mean, deeply symbolic of renewal and of resurrection.
And then when you look at the soldiers asleep, they are very, very individualized portraits, presumably, of Piero's contemporaries. And in fact, I think people feel that the sleeper on Christ, the one who's the second from the left, if you're looking at the painting, I think people say that that is a self-portrait of Piero.
Mm. Also, but, I think what's interesting there, and leads into a little bit about your career, is that there are actually not enough legs. So there are only four soldiers, but only three sets of legs. And I think that's quite interesting because he's not chosen not to depict the legs in order to have a nice composition. So as a theatre director, you must make similar sort of tricks in the career that you have.
As a theatre director, one of the things you're doing is you're organising figures in space so that it tells a story and that it catches your imagination. But also that the viewer's eye is guided to what you want them to look at, not what you don't want them to look at. And there are a lot of ways of doing that. What these paintings do, though, is that what's brilliant is your eye goes back to Christ staring out at you, but then it keeps going back to humankind, to ordinary people. So that there's this brilliant tension, is that it's not just about the dominant figure, although the dominant figure obviously is very dominant. It's this relationship between the dominant figure and the rest of mankind, humankind, which then extends beyond the frame of the painting out to the audience. And it seems to me that in the theatre, the word is made flesh, is made material. Which is also the case in the very best of Catholic art and Catholic belief, as I understand it. And these paintings seem to manifest that. If you looked at the resurrection and took away the soldiers and just had the risen Christ, it wouldn't be half as powerful. And I think the sort of point is that the risen Christ has an impact on these guys who are asleep. And of course, these guys who are asleep on who don't witness this great event. Mm. Talking about my work, I mean, I'm writing a big book at the moment, which I've been writing for years, about the working class, the soldiers, and all the other kind of ordinary folk in Shakespeare. And there's a brilliant thing, which is there's a slave in Julius Caesar called Lucius, who's Brutus's slave, and he keeps being asleep and he keeps missing. He misses the appearance of the ghost of Julius Caesar at the Battle of Philippi because he's asleep. He misses the conspiracy because he's asleep. And it's a kind of, in a funny kind of way, I think what Piero is doing is he's saying, you know, and Shakespeare in a way is saying, all of us, we're all asleep and we're missing the thing that matters. And I sound like I'm a religious person. I'm not at all a religious person, but I'm very drawn to that brilliant human human empathy, human understanding of everyday life that these paintings seem to catch. So that they're sort of caught somewhere between divine inspiration, whatever that is, and scientific naturalism. And they're somewhere in that huge evolution in human thought, which of course is the great Renaissance moment, which has both of those, and which you can see in Shakespeare, and you can see in the greatest of Renaissance art, I think.
But what you were saying about the fact that the soldiers are sleeping while the resurrection is going on reminds me of the Auden poem, Musée de Beaux-Arts. About suffering, they were never wrong, the old masters. That sense that life goes on, and the minutiae of people's life goes on whilst these big events are taking place.
That's absolutely crucial. I mean, the Auden poem about the Bruegel painting, where you see the fall of Icarus, and you see the guy still ploughing the fields. Mm. And that sense of dramatic counterpoint informs a lot of my work, both my writing work and my directing work, because you say, well, the play's called Hamlet, and Hamlet matters, but you can only really understand Hamlet if you also understand the gravedigger, and what's really happening is in relation is the two of them in relationship to each other, because we live in society, we're connected to each other, and I think that's something that these great paintings do. Just about the material everyday of this stuff. So you rightly pointed out that the background of the painting of the resurrection is symbolic from the winter into the spring, from death into life, and all those things which you would associate with the resurrection. But I think it's also a landscape outside of Sansepolcro. This painting is in the town hall of Sansepolcro, which, of course, is the Holy Sepulchre. So it's, of course, the right painting to be in the town hall of Sansepolcro. These soldiers are not wearing Roman soldier outfits. They're dressed as 14th century, 15th century Italian soldiers. And then if you look at the baptism, there's a fascinating thing. Sansepolcro, which is where Piero came from, the Tiber flows through Sansepolcro, the great classical river. And of course, this painting of the baptism, you see the River Jordan, but the River Jordan is also the Tiber. So that what he's doing is he's sort of saying, he's making it not just Italian, but of course neoclassical by painting his local environment. I mean, this fantastic tree that you see, which I'm sure is the symbol of new life and all the rest of it, and of course is the tree, the cross that he'll be crucified on, is also, I will bet you, a portrait of a tree near Sansepolcro. And you in the baptism, you see, there's Christ staring forward, with the dove hovering above, and you can very brilliantly, the focal point, the absolute maximum focus place in the whole painting, and all the lines of connection do it, is his forehead, where the water is dripping onto his forehead. But in the background, you see a guy taking his shirt off who's also being baptized or also just about to go for a swim. You can't really tell exactly what's happening. Not all the angels are looking at Christ. One is looking away. So that again, you have this brilliant counterpointing going on, which is what I mean by objectivity, by like the Auden poem, like any great play says, this is important, but look, this is also important. Look over here. Look on the other side of what's happening. And then you start to understand how the world is made, because it's made up of contradiction and paradox, not out of simplicity. I mean, I think Shakespeare, like the Greeks, like these paintings, constructs on a paradoxical principle all the time. It's always a set of opposites. And I think this does the same thing. And yet, like I was saying about Chekhov, it's got commitment to it. You know, there is a you can sense a very powerful sense of religious belief. But the religious belief by itself doesn't mean anything if you don't see how it affects ordinary life, if you don't see its impact in the day-to-day, in the quotidian, in the material. So it's not an abstraction.
Can you remember the first time you saw the paintings?
Well, I think I saw these paintings when... I remember we went to Italy when I was about 14, and I think that's when I first saw the Resurrection. And I must have first seen the baptism when I was about 11. So I've kind of lived these paintings all my life. There's a funny thing is that before I decided to become a theatre director and you know, you just mentioned going to Cambridge and everything, before I decided to do that, I wanted to be a painter. And in a funny kind of way, these paintings and a few others spoke to me in a way that I don't really understand why they spoke so deeply, but they did. And I wanted to be a painter, and this stuff was my... I wanted to be a figurative painter, and this stuff was my, in some ways, a very deep inspiration for me. I was right not to be a painter because I don't have... That's not... If I have any talent, it's not that. But for some reason, this stuff went very, very deep in me. The quality of light is very peculiar in Pierre. You don't know where the sun is, but the whole thing seems to be just glowing with this strange, delicate, milky light. And it couldn't be further away from the cliché of Italian Renaissance painting, which is all it's dark and gloomy and you know, Caravaggio-esque. It's airy and it's fresh and it's light and it's kind of lit up. The figures seem to be lit up from inside in some peculiar way, which I find very, very appealing. It is strange for me sitting here going, I love these paintings, when I am a defiant atheist and they are fantastically religious paintings. And I do sometimes think that you can't understand religious art, you can't understand Matthew Passion unless you sort of have some sense of belief. So I'm a bit... I got worried that I'm being a hypocrite in loving this stuff so much or being inconsistent or contradictory, but maybe that's the paradoxical principle.
And there's an interesting story, isn't there, about the painting in the Second World War?
In 1944... The Germans were in San Sepolcro and the British Army was going up Italy, the Americans on the other side. And there's a story about a guy who was a British tank commander, and he got the order to shell San Sepolcro. He was in his tanks up on the hill overlooking, to shell it to get the Germans to leave. And he had in his head, because he was an educated guy, he had in his head this thing that Aldous Huxley had written about, which said the greatest painting in the world. And he went, I know they were the greatest painting in the world, and for some reason I know San Sepolcro, I know the name of San Sepolcro. But he didn't really put two and two together. But he just had an instinct, and the Germans actually by then had abandoned the town. And they'd done a little bit of shelling, but they stopped shelling. And he just said, let's not do any more shelling, let's just leave it. And then the Germans left. And then he drove in with his tank, and then some Italian boy took him to the Resurrection. And he realised that he had saved the greatest painting in the world, or he had stopped the greatest painting in the world being destroyed. Because it is painted on a wall. Mm. And if that building was bombed, you know, was shelled, it would have been over.
What a fantastic story. Thanks so much for coming in, Stephen.
Oh, you're welcome. It was lovely.
Today we were talking about two paintings by the 15th century Italian painter Piero della Francesca. The Baptism of Christ, which is on display at the National Gallery in London, and The Resurrection, a fresco which remains in its original location in San Sepolcro in Italy. Piero della Francesca was born around 1415 and died in 1492. According to Giorgio Vasari's Lives, the 16th century series of artist biographies, Piera was also known as a mathematician and wrote three works which discussed perspective, algebra and geometry. Art historians believe that the meditative nature of his works are enhanced by his geometrical precision. In 1925, the writer Aldous Huxley described the resurrection as the greatest picture in the world. If you would like to see the artworks we were discussing this week, or carry on the conversation further, you can find me on Twitter, at Laura Jane Foley. And if you want to discuss the show, please use the hashtag #MyFavouriteWorkOfArt. The show was recorded at Wise Budder and was edited by John Last. The title music is Blue, From Colours by Dimitri Scarlato. I hope you'll be able to join me next time. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.